Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome, everybody, to the Guy James Show on this 18th day of June, 2008. Coming to you from the Blue Waters and Sandy Beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, Fort Myers, Naples area. How are you? How you been? Sorry I couldn't be with you yesterday. We had much to do and couldn't be here. I tried, believe me, I tried. And so, as a result of that, things have built up over the past few days with me. There's been a lot of news these past few days, except on MSNBC, of course. But there's been news everywhere. And so many things. Did you ever have a weekend where so many things pissed you off that you couldn't even remember them all, that you really ought to carry one of those little recorders? And by the way, I have one of those little recorders, and I don't carry it with me. I don't know why. It's about the size of a couple of pens, I guess. It's very tiny. And with my memory the way it is, I ought to carry that thing, but I don't. But anyway, things build up and build up, and you know how they are. First of all, let me get this off my chest, okay? I've just got to say this to somebody. I really haven't talked to anybody all weekend that I could really discuss this with, all right? Tim Russert, okay? First of all, my comments, whatever they may end up being here, are in no way meant to be derogatory toward Tim Russert. From all I understand, he was a good guy, a good father, a good journalist, a good boss, a good friend, all those things. I think we'll just say yes, that's the case. I don't personally know. I didn't know the man. But if ever I have seen a case where the media went absolutely hog wild nuts over something, this was it this weekend. And again, my comments in no way are against Tim Russert at all. They couldn't be because I didn't know him. I didn't especially like his gotcha style of questioning and all that in debates. In fact, I didn't like his questioning in debates. I was not a big Tim Russert fan, but I will not argue with anybody that says he was a really fine guy. But have you ever seen anything so far over the top as this thing? When did it start? Friday? Was it Friday? Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and as I understand it, we're going to have a televised funeral coming up here in another 56 minutes. Maybe you think, Guy, you're terrible for saying this. You might. And if you do, okay, I apologize. No, I don't really. These are my feelings. I have seen really important people in this country die. You have. There have been many people in your lifetime die far more important than Tim Russert. Far more. You have known many people in your life who were great fathers. I know I have. You've known many people in your life that were wonderful friends that would do anything for you. I know I have. Did any of them get the send off that Tim Russert is getting here? I just never seen anything like it. It was an orgy of coverage. It just went on and on and on and on and on. And it got to the point where I really feel, had I been his family and watched this, I would have been embarrassed. I really would have been embarrassed by the to-do that MSNBC did. I mean, they wanted us all to know that they are celebrities. Their lives are important, they are the elitist, and we must pay homage to them. That's what this was all about this weekend. What this was all about this weekend is that they are the news. They have become the news. You stop and think about the moderators of some of these debates. The moderators were the news, not the subject of the debate. Not the important issues of the debate. The moderators became, the Stephanopoulos and Gibson, whatever your name was, they became the subject of the debate. They became the news. Tim Russert became the news. All these guys become the news. I can't even talk today. It bothered me so much. And it shouldn't. Something like that shouldn't bother me so much, but it's just completely over the top. Completely over the top, and I just it makes me trust the media even less than I did before. But here they are extolling the virtues of Tim Russert, and that's fine. Do it in a respectful manner, and then let's get on. Let's move on. Well, he rose to the top of his field. Well, okay, fine, I'll give you that. How about some people I was looking at in news today? Jacob and Elaine out in Missouri. They raised 32 foster kids. Almost all of them have gone to college. What about them when they die? Will they get 4 days worth of news coverage? I mean, it's something really, really, really meaningful for mankind. How about the Medal of Honor winners? Did you see 4 days of coverage about them? Can you even name any of their names? Can you name any of the dead kids over in Iraq that the media helps, this war that people helped start? And that's probably what pisses me off most about all this, is the folks on MSNBC and other networks helped start this war. They wanted this war. And they were all for it when it started, including Tim Russert, by the way. They were just as guilty as starting this war as was Junior Bush, because they were his accomplices. Did any of those dead soldiers, if you ever saw any dead soldiers, which you don't anymore, now do you? What do we have pictures on 1 week, was it, where someone sneaked in and took several pictures of caskets on the plane at Dover, Delaware? Other than that, we've, out of, what, almost 4,200 killed, we haven't seen only maybe a dozen of those boxes with the flags on of people coming back from Iraq dead. Did they get 4 days worth of coverage? Did any of them get 15 minutes worth of coverage by the press? The answer to that is no, they didn't. And once again, do not take my statements the wrong way. I have nothing against Tim Russert. But when you stack up the kid that went over and got killed, did what he was to do, ordered to do in Iraq, and in some hellhole where no American soldier would have ever been had it not been for the press being accomplices in this whole thing. Him going over there and believing he was fighting for his country, obeying the commander-in-chief, and getting killed. Some of them in heroic circumstances, you don't even know their names. And we should. We should see the pictures of every one of them, and we should know the names of every last one of them. Instead of honoring a journalist for four straight days. Those cameras should be at the funerals of some of those kids coming home from Iraq. The message is simple. The media is the news. They are the newsmakers. They're the people that control the news. They control lock, stock, and barrel what we see and what we hear. And they found it necessary this weekend to hear about one of them. Constantly. And I don't mean that in any way irreverently toward Tim Russert. It's the business that I'm complaining about. The news business. The so-called media. This country is so out of balance. We honor as heroes people who aren't. And we let people who are heroes go unnamed and unrecognized. We honor celebrity in this country. We honor movie stars. We have awards programs on TV every damn week for some sort of TV stars or movie stars or music stars. Just let's take care of celebrity. Let's make sure everybody that's a celebrity, let's give them awards and let's give them all the coverage that we can possibly give them. Let's elevate them to heights. Oh. Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan, those are two that I can think of. But paparazzi following movie stars around Hollywood like wolf packs. Like what those people do is something special in the grand scheme of things. It is not. I'm just highly offended with the priorities of this nation right now. Highly offended. I am less proud of my country than I want to be. Much less. Because not only has our government started this, gone along with all this, gone completely off track and disguised the and hidden the deaths of thousands of American kids coming home, hidden it from us because they want to play politics with it instead. It doesn't help their cause to see death by Americans in this war. Maybe the American people would be even more against it than they are now. If they saw those caskets every night on the news. If they saw pictures of dead Americans blown all to hell and back laying on a battlefield in Baghdad or Basra or Mosul. Maybe if people saw that every night, maybe if the press did their job every night, instead of canonizing themselves, maybe if they were really media like they ought to be, I'd feel differently about it, and maybe you would too. I am disgusted by the whole thing. And again, it's got nothing to do with Tim Russert. It could have been Joe Smith, for all I know, working at CBS News. It doesn't matter. It's the fact that we are some sort of a celebrity-driven society. I've known of presidents that didn't get a send-off like this. Let me head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yeah, hi, my name's Heather Miller. I'm a Detroit teacher, and I just won a major lawsuit against the Detroit Public Schools involving a police brutality case, and I'm wondering if there's someone I could talk to about it.
Oh, well, we're live on the air right now.
Oh, goodness. I mean, I don't know if your readers or your listeners have heard at all about the...
No, we're discussing something completely different at the moment. Give us a call back tomorrow. We're on live from 3 to 5. Give us a call back tomorrow.
Okay, great.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, that didn't quite work out the way I planned on. So back to my subject. Before I was interrupted, no fault of theirs. That's what happens when you don't have a producer to screen all the calls in the studio, which we don't. We've never done that. But I'd like to know how you feel about that. I am one of those people. I watched the news a lot this weekend. I watched MSNBC when I could stand it. CNN went for it quite a bit. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. I really don't think I have. Again, Tim Russert, from all accounts, was a good man. I'll stipulate to that. But somebody said the other day to me that we now know more about Tim Russert than we do Vladimir Putin. I think about people that they say, well, you know, he rose to the top of his profession. My Uncle Budge was the best farmer I ever knew. He wasn't on the news for 4 days. I guess that's one of the perks of journalism. St. Albans School. Does his son Luke... I didn't catch that. Does his son Luke go to St. Albans School? That's that fancy school that Al Gore went to. It's right beside the National Cathedral, by the way. A beautiful setting for a little school. A little private school. A very expensive private little school. I saw Russert's son, Luke, speak. Very well-spoken young man. Looks just like Tim Russert. Seemed like a nice young man. But again, this has nothing to do with Tim Russert. It's to do with the press. The media. The media in this country that's so far off a track. It is just unbelievable to me. Just absolutely unbelievable. But then again, I'm one of those ones, and along with some of you, I'm having a hard time with keeping it together with a lot of things that go on in the news right now. Junior Bush, this past week, and after the habeas corpus ruling by the Supreme Court, a 5-4 decision, wherein Anton Scalia made his idiotic statement. Bush made one of the most ridiculous, ignorant statements that I've heard him make yet. And I don't know how many of you caught this. I don't know how many of you heard him say it. But I saw him say it, and then I read it in print several times on the gun. Oh, my God. Of all the things that he has said that have been just in la-la land over the last 7 years... I think this might be one of the craziest, might be one of the most stupid things that a president of the United States... I was just blown away when he said this. And the gist of it was, no matter if the Supreme Court did strike down the habeas corpus ruling, he said, the appellate court and the lower court backed me. Yeah. So let me get this right. I guess the new constitutional rule is screw the Supreme Court. It's whomever gets the most court decisions in his favor. In other words, you could get backed by half a dozen lower courts. The thing gets sent to the Supreme Court where they rule against you, but you still win because the score is 6-1, and this guy's still allowed to rule the country? Have people gone mad? Allowing this completely ignorant fool to still be our president? And what's worse is quite a few people are going to vote for this guy, a guy that's even worse, from all indications. I thought the value of this was that this does exonerate me for saying we need a national competency test in order to vote. There's a man who's the President of the United States that really does believe that because the lower court and the appellate court backed him on this, that should overrule the Supreme Court. I heard that and thought, what the hell is he saying? Who knows? 866-546-5254. I see the stock market's making a little bit of a rally. It was down about 120 or 30 points earlier. It's only down about 84 right now. So all of you with the huge portfolios listening to the show right now, you can relax a little bit. I did see that Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and she's one of my favorite in the House, she said that the House Judiciary Committee would be willing to arrest Karl Rove if the former White House official doesn't testify about his role in the firing of 9 U.S. attorneys in 2006. And she was asked by Dan Abrams if the committee would go so far as having Rove arrested, and Wasserman said it would. She said, well, if that's what it takes, I mean, we really cannot allow the co-equal branch of government, the legislative branch, to be trampled upon by the executive branch. The founding fathers established three branches of government. We are a co-equal branch, and this is an administration that essentially has ignored and disrespected the role of the legislative branch for far too long. And, of course, her fellow Judiciary Committee member, Robert Wexler, is making the same threat. So they saying that they would go so far as to arrest Karl Rove had he not showed up. Sure. Sure they will. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll arrest Karl Rove. I can see it now, can't you? Remember, this is the same House of Representatives. This is the same people led by John Conyers that said they would move to impeach Mr. Bush. Here's a president that could have been impeached by some of his action half a dozen times already. And they will not have Karl Rove arrested. Believe me, they will not. Never happen. Come on, make a liar out of me, people. Do it. Ah, yes. What else is in my notes? Of course, McCain and the big oil money, and we're not going to hear the end of this. The oil is the news nowadays. I see it's up $2.67 so far today. $136.68 right now. Such good news. McCain's taken over $1 million, $1 million from big oil during his campaign so far. And I guess my point there is, are you beginning to get the message? If there's a battle between big oil and we the people, who do you think is going to win? I personally believe that we're screwed on this unless a serious windfall profit tax is imposed. Or better yet, as I have suggested on this program several times, unless the United States government, in the name of national security, nationalizes the oil company. You know, I had a guy at my home yesterday. Repaired the air conditioning system. And that's another story. Oh, God. Anyway, you ever call a serviceman out to your house and you think you just got a little of this or a little of that wrong with something, and when he leaves, you're scratching your head and looking at your empty checkbook? Mm-hmm. Well, that's what happened to me yesterday. Anyway, I don't know how the subject came up, but he says something about the price of gasoline and oil, and did I know anything about it? And, of course, I've done so much reading on that lately, I feel like a walking encyclopedia on the subject. I really do. And he said, what do you think you ought to do? And I said, first, number one, we ought to nationalize the oil companies. And he looked at me. He said, what are you, a communist? This guy wouldn't know the difference between a communist, a fascist, or a somebody, a member of the Bull Moose Party. And I knew that. What are you, communist? Well, I don't know. If you call it what you want, is it a socialistic view, nationalizing the oil company? Yes, it is. But there comes a time, no matter how much of a capitalist you are, no matter how much you believe in business having a free reign and doing what they want to, and I do. Laissez-faire system, I believe in it, but there comes a time when there are excesses, and there comes a time when the national security is threatened. And that's when the government has to get involved. And whether you like something socialistic or not, you have to put it on the scales in this case, and you have to look at the good of the nation as opposed to the good of the oil companies. And I think we all know how that balances out. So would I nationalize oil? You betcha I would in a heartbeat.
What, are you a communist?
Yeah, well. And then, you know, we hear this mantra going on and on and on and on and on right now, and you hear it every time you turn on the tube. I'm getting so sick of it. Drill! We got to drill! We got to drill here, there, and over yonder and everywhere. We just need to do more drilling. Absolutely, we need to do more drilling. Let's drill in Anwar. Let's drill off the coast of Florida. And isn't it odd now that Charlie Crist is changing his mind about drilling off the coast of Florida, and even one of our beloved senators here in Florida is changing his mind about it as well. Amazing what $4 a gallon gas will do. Let's drill off the coastal shelf all the way up the Atlantic coast, all around the coast of Florida, all around it. And of course, they've got this bogus story about how the Chinese are drilling right off the coast of United States right now in international waters, which is bogus, and we know that's a bogus story. But let's drill. Let's drill everywhere. Let's drill out in the Gulf of Mexico, and let's just drill. Let's just put down one hole after another. Let's drill every damn place we can find to drill. Let's drill. We can drill our way out of this. And you look at what the established reserves are in some of these places they want to drill, the prospective reserves, and you see that here and there it's 1%. 2% of our usage, and you figure up how many years. Someone wrote me about the field up in North Dakota right now that's producing. Well, yeah, and I think at capacity, if it were pumping at capacity, it's got something like, I don't know, 6 or 8 months worth of oil in it. Well, okay, that's some oil, but big deal. It's not going to get us out of this predicament we're in. It's just not. Let's head over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello?
So, Guy?
Yes.
Hey, it's Sandra.
Hi, Sandra.
Are you on a break, or?
No.
Oh, are we live?
Yes, indeed. Live from New York, it's Sandra. No, well, not New York, but, okay.
Yeah, I was just, you know, listening to you talk about, first of all, the Tim Russert thing. Yes, 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 everything you were saying, you know, it's just, it was just hideous, and disturbing, and on so many levels, because I know a lot of people who are good fathers too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I don't see him. All I saw him doing, I'm sorry to say this, but I thought, well, one less a-hole to hassle Obama. Sorry, that's just what I felt.
It was gotcha journalism in most cases. It was.
But yeah, no, it's just sort of the way they were just, you know, it was like you said, just the elite celebrating themselves, and mm-hmm. the hell with the rest of us. We were just either you change the channel or you, and they even had a state funeral for dude, didn't they?
Yeah, I guess it's coming up in about a half hour, I think.
It's just hideous. I mean, what in the world? Who else would get a public funeral that's not you know, a statesman? I don't get it.
I can't think of anybody in the last, other than presidents in the last 10 years that got anything like that.
Yeah, and it's just, because it's sort of a bit bizarre. I think they're so insular, I don't know if they, because it really is quite bizarre, you know?
Don't you think if Russert were alive, he'd probably be embarrassed by it?
Well, you would think that his family members would be a bit taken aback. I mean, it's a bit much, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he died. It was sudden, and you know, I'm, of course, sad for his family.
Yes, absolutely.
That's about the extent of it for me as the public. I'm like, okay, but this, it's just going on. It went, I mean, over the weekend it was crazy.
It was the darnest thing I've ever seen on TV. And I'm not making light of his death either. I mean, it is sad. He died young and all that. And he, how far do you go with this?
No, it was just but it was just really over the top. That's the thing I just thought. You know, I thought, is this for real? You know,
yeah.
It went into the absurd. That's how over the top it was to me. But anyway, I, you know, hopefully after this sort of, quote, state funeral, it'll die away, you know? No pun intended, but it just go away. Because I'm almost kind of embarrassed by the whole spectacle. How about you?
Well, yeah, I had a chance, which I never do, but on Friday afternoon I had a chance, and I actually heard it, like, right after it happened. And so they come on and they start doing a thing about it and all, and I thought, okay, well, they'll lead off every hour of their show with Tim Rush passed away today, and they'll do a little 5-minute tribute to him each hour of the program. And then I got to say, wait a minute, this is 24/7 coverage. And I, well, okay, so Saturday all day,
no,
Saturday
escalated.
All day Sunday, all day Monday. Oh, that's really,
no, and it was just, you know, they kept showing at Brokaw when he was breaking the news, you know, I'm just like, listen, enough, right?
Oh, and there are people listening to you and me now saying, you know, that's terrible. They're very disrespectful, Tim Russert. It doesn't have anything to do with Tim Russert.
I know, but like, how many times did you say someone's dead? You know what I'm saying?
That's right. That's exactly right. Oh, well. Maybe the press will move back to being useful some of these days. I kind of doubt it. Well, they're useful to somebody. They're useful to the Bush administration, I guess. Did we lose you? Ah, we lost Sandra. I should have looked at the light. We'd have known that. No, thanks for calling, Sandra. Good to hear from you. Well, I think we'll take a little break right now. No time like the present. And we'll get back in just a few minutes.
The jobs are never coming back. The illegals are never going home. So we're going to have a lot more wars.
We're going to start a lot of wars. He has promised, for the record, Keith, John McCain's platform, and it certainly looks inviting for the fall. He has promised less jobs and more wars. Now, that's something we can all rally behind. Back to you, Keith.
We'll be right back. talked about are staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100. That'd be fine with me.
President Bush has talked about our staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100.
If all he offers is more of the same, is John McCain the right choice for America's future? The Democratic National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Maybe 100, maybe 1,000, maybe 1,000,000. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. No. We were talking about drill, drill, drill. That's the answer to everything right now. That's the big Republican word right now. Drill. Let's drill everywhere. Do the math on some of these oil reserves, you see, that these projected reserves that they've got in North Dakota and Anwar and off the coast. And take a look at what kind of reserves they think they may have. And then how many years that it'll take to drill and produce the oil. And then let me know if that's going to do anything for the gas prices right now. And you know, it's not going to do a damn thing. It's not. Many experts have said if they start drilling in 100 different places right now, they haven't been allowed to drill, it's not going to change the price of oil. And, you know, well, we won't have any spills. Don't worry, we won't have any spills. Now, I'm being selfish here because I live very close to the Gulf Coast of Florida. In fact, if I could stand on top of my house, I could see the Gulf because it's a tall building. Anyway, I'm saying this for a selfish reason, but we've had Charlie Crist, the governor, saying no. We had Jeb Bush vehemently opposed to drilling off the Gulf Coast. One spill was all it will take to completely devastate, and I'm talking devastate, the economy of South Florida. One spill. The beautiful, pristine beaches of Naples, Florida, all the way up to the panhandle. One spill will devastate the economy of Florida. Mark my word, it will. You've seen those pictures of the Exxon Valdez and the oil spilled and the animals and the beach and the rocks. They're not going to be able to clean the beach after that happens. And tourism will die. One spill. And this will look like the black hole of Calcutta. Just takes one. And the other thing is lower prices, get real. Get real. Let the oil companies drill any damn place they want to drill. Anywhere. And let's see how fast, number one, the price of oil goes down. How quickly the price of gas is going to go down a couple of bucks overnight. And let's get serious. You know what the answer will be. It's the same as it always is. Well, the price of oil is up today because we saw a guy with a gun near a pipeline over at the Straits of Hormuz. We think we got a little shortage. Of course, one of the refineries is only 85% capacity. We got to shut down a refinery for a little while. We've got the dollar instead of the euro. I mean, we've got, you know, 100 reasons why oil is the price that it is. If we let them go, start drilling any place you want to. You know what the answer is going to be? Lower prices. Well, folks, we can't give you lower prices. Look at all that money we had to spend on all that drilling, folks. We had to do the exploring, we had to do the drilling, we had to house and feed those guys out on those oil rigs, and you know, we pay those guys good money, folks. We've got to have $6 a gallon now. I mean, we had to spend all that money drilling. Yeah, and Ray reminds me, don't forget about the fog around Houston. That was an excuse as well. So, no matter which way we turn right now, we're not going to see prices go down. Maybe we do need some more supply. I won't even argue with that. Maybe we need to drill some places and find a bigger supply. Let's give them that. But it's not the answer to the long-range problem. Alternative energy is the answer to the long-range problem. That's the only thing that's going to get us out of this. The only thing. We're going to be extorted for the price of whatever they want for their oil from now until it runs out, whenever that may be. The question is, will we be ready with an alternative source of energy at that time? And right now, I can see no evidence that there's any huge push, something like President Kennedy did. When President Kennedy took office, he had the cojones to stand up in front of the American people and say, we will have a man on the moon before such and such a date. And we did it. It was a monumental task. A huge task. And we did it. We did it. Do you see the president giving people in this country any kind of a challenge like that now about alternative energy? The answer is no. Certainly not. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Preston in Denver.
Hi, Preston.
It's nice to be able to call you. I used to call you months and months ago when you were on another station.
Oh, yeah.
And I have a day off today, and glad I had an opportunity to say hello and enjoying your program. And, you know, I also had that same reaction regarding the Tim Russert coverage. It was just 24/7, and I think they very much used it as a opportunity for PR for the station, for MSNBC, and then they had Jack Welch on, the president, president of GE, on talking about, you know, the integrity and all this stuff. And, you know, that show is, you know, it's more of the corporate media, which is lacking in integrity in so many ways. I think it was mostly gotcha politics. You know, he had his moments. I think Russert was fair when he did give Ralph Nader a platform to share his thoughts. And, you know, I know a lot of people have mixed feelings about Ralph, but just in that moment he had to say, you know, Washington, D.C. is corporate occupied territory, I think is worthwhile.
Well, and the other thing was that Russert was known as the go-to guy by the Bush administration. When they wanted to put Dick Cheney on to get a message out, they went to Tim Russert. It was commonly known inside the White House that Russert was their go-to guy. It balances out, I suppose.
You mentioned that strange look you got when you dared to suggest that we nationalize the oil industry. And the strangest thing was, Maxine Waters said something about that, and people responded aghast. But a couple of days ago, I was watching, I think, the Fox Business show, of all things, and they had a couple guys on from Forbes, including Steve Forbes, but two of them were advocating nationalizing the airline industry.
Oh.
I was really surprised. And the host and the other guests were making fun of them, saying, oh, thanks for the idea, comrade, and stuff like that. But but they're like, look, this is not working. This is not a market. This is subsidized. And, you know, so many of our industries, if we're really honest, they have very little to do with this free market rhetoric that we hear so much about. The public's been involved with either the research and the development or the land giveaways or the subsidies of one sort or another.
How much free market was there when the Fed started passing out, 75, 80, 150 billion, whatever it was, to the lending institutions earlier in the spring? It wasn't free market.
Yep. So in many ways, it's like the public already owns these industries. We just have to, you know, take ownership of it and not be hoodwinked by these, all these guys in suits telling us, we're communists or socialists or whatever, while they shove all our money into their pockets.
Sure. And it's the old deal of, look at the tax subsidies, once again, passing out to the oil companies. It's the same old thing there and on Wall Street. You privatize the profits and you socialize the losses. And so don't anybody tell me that there isn't any little bit of socialistic stuff going on already, because there is.
you know, another way we kind of create these markets for them or have these markets imposed on us are the way in which our communities are designed. The oil industry, I think, is very much involved in how we've developed these suburbs all around the country, you know, that have made us utterly dependent upon oil to get around. In the past, we had neighborhoods, and we have neighborhoods in, you know, older parts of towns across the country that you can walk to get around in. Or we had trolleys in cities across the country that people could use very inexpensively. It, in a sense, was a nationalized form of transit.
Sure.
And that was intentionally destroyed. Standard Oil and Firestone, they were actually convicted of a criminal conspiracy, fined a few thousand dollars. But for that criminal penalty, they've been reaping billions.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and again, you know, they talk about government dependency being such a bad thing, but they want us, they want corporate dependency, which they've created. And that's, I think, on top of alternative energy, that's another thing we could do. We could transform so many of our communities and make them so that you do not have to get in your car every time you need a loaf of bread.
Right.
And so many other things that we could do to make pedestrian-friendly neighborhoods or bike-friendly neighborhoods. Obama, during one of his Q&As, he had a questioner in his audience who said, you know, the price of oil is problematic in many ways, but in some ways it's a good thing, and it provides opportunities for us to reconsider things like mass transit. And Obama said, you know, we've got the most raggedy mass transit system among the industrialized nations there is.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Hopefully he'll move on that if he does get elected.
We do. We do have a raggedy mass transit. And it's virtually non-existent in many places. Even where I live, it's non-existent. But, you know, you bring up that word, well, we're going to socialize this. And this guy the other day calling me a commie or a socialist. Hey, pal, all of our roads are socialistic. Did you know that? Did you know we all went together and bought those roads? Did you? I mean, so many things in our society, and yet, oh, no, we can't do that.
That water system that you took a shower in
yes.
this morning?
Yes.
That's terrible socialism. Hugo Chavez has actually been nationalizing a lot of their industries. electricity, mining, some of the oil stuff. Exxon is waging economic warfare against that country right now. They're suing Venezuela, trying to get a bunch of their assets frozen. And, you know, he's certainly in the crosshairs of these corporate gangsters.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and you know exactly why. Hey, yeah. That oil looks mighty nice to everybody right now. And the oil in Iran looks mighty nice to everybody right now. Gas is, gasoline, by the way, folks, last I checked, and it was last week in Venezuela, is 14 cents a gallon. I just thought I'd throw that in there.
I was lucky enough to be able to go to Venezuela about 2 years ago and to learn firsthand about some of the interesting projects they have going on there. Things like, they're expanding their transit system. They're planting like a million trees in some of the areas that have been deforested. They've protected their coastlines from those massive factory fishing trawlers that scoop all the life out of the oceans. They've made that off limits to these conglomerates to protect their local fisheries, their fishing communities. They've got community radio stations that have started up. They've got food giveaways, actually. When I was in Caracas, they had very few people compared to some other cities, you know, begging for food because they give food to the poor or they make it cheap for the poor. And a lot of, health care, people being in clinics, health clinics for the first time. They're working in association with Cuba. And you know, we're not supposed to do that either, but nevertheless, Cuba has these incredibly well-trained doctors, and they're exchanging, Venezuela is exchanging some of their oil for Cuba's doctors coming over to help them out with, you know, giving people sight again. I mean, simple like cataract operations that were unheard of before the Chavez administration came in are now happening regularly.
Sure, he's got his bad raps. I mean, he certainly does. But like you say, there have been some remarkable things take place in that country too. And And so let's remember that part. We don't need to remember all the things that we disagree with him. I mean, he's been an innovator in some ways.
Definitely. And I agree with some of the criticisms, but I think it's very dangerous to hear even the Democrats, even Obama recently called him a dictator. And, you know, with some computers that were found and with the FARC in Colombia, they were spreading these rumors that Chavez was going to try to get uranium. I mean, some of the same lines we had heard before. Greg Palast, though, totally debunked it. And, you know, I think we kind of need to stand in solidarity with these movements to the South, or else we're going to, you know, we actually tried. The U.S. supported the military coup that took place in 2002 that removed Chavez from office.
Yes.
And the most incredible thing happened. Thousands and thousands and thousands of mostly poor people from the barrios poured into the streets and were such a threat that the elite were forced to put him back into office. There's a movie about it. You could see it for free called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. And a couple of Irish documentarians were there making a film about Venezuela, and they ended up in the middle of this coup attempt, and it's one of the most incredible films you'll see.
I think the CIA ended up a bit chagrined over that whole thing.
They sure did. And we have our victories here and there. We can't lose sight of that either.
That's right.
But I'm glad to hear you're still at it.
Well, Preston, thanks for listening. I'm most likely going to be visiting Denver toward the end of August
okay.
for the convention. And
maybe we'll get the opportunity to shake hands sometime.
So do they still have that? You know, it's been a long time since I was in Denver. They had this really cool restaurant, and I think it was downtown Denver. It's been a long time. I think it was called Casa Bonita, and it was a Mexican restaurant where you they had little flagpoles on each of the table, and when you wanted service, you raised your flag. It was really a nice place. They had a pool inside where guys did like cliff diving.
it's still there, you bet.
Still there, no kidding.
Yes, indeed.
Well, I'll have to hit that place again when I get out there.
Okay.
Hey, thanks for your call, Preston.
Sure thing, guy. Take care, man.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Why did I remember that? Casa Bonita. Who knows? But it was really a nice experience. All you folks out that way, you probably know all about that. 866-546-5254. Getting some good calls today. 866-546-5254. Got a little bit of a cold today. Can't quite shake it. I don't know why. Hey, listen, I wanted to mention one thing today. I'm a little bit, as you know, I'm 100% for Barack Obama. I'm backing him all the way. He wasn't my first choice, but now he is the choice, and he will be my choice, and I do so very willingly. But this is true about every issue, and especially on Iraq, but Barack's failure to speak up on another one of these FISA capitulations by the Democratic leadership that's brewing in the House right now is really troubling to me. It really is. And if he really wants to be a strong, strong leader of the Democratic Party, and if he wants to be the leader of this nation, he needs to right now speak out on this issue about FISA, and I mean speak out and be absolutely clear on what, and be forceful about it as well. And I mean that. He should have to come right now. Where are you on this, Barack? Where are you on this FISA thing? Because the Democrats are going to capitulate. You know they're going to. You know they're going to. They're going to give in on this. And we should also be hearing his exact plan for getting our troops out of Iraq. His exact plan. How, when, and why, and all that. Anything less, and it leaves him able to continue on with this current status quo policy, and that would be a disaster. Not only for the troops and our nation, but for the Democratic Party as well. So just a word to the wise, and they're wise, their campaign is, but I would love to see them put politics aside and explain both of those issues to the electorate. I want to know, Barack, where are you on this FISA thing? I want you to exert some pressure on these people right now, and that will show some real, genuine leadership. And also, Let's get out there and let's be telling the American public. Let's not give them speeches. Let's not give them platitudes. Let's get a, I am going to end our participation in the Iraq occupation this day, this day, this day, and this is how I'm going to do it. I want to hear the answers. And I don't want anybody dancing around the issues, playing politics with the issues. He is my candidate, he is your candidate, and I want to hear him speak out on those two issues. We've done enough playing namby-pamby with the Republicans on FISA. I am terribly offended by the FISA Act, and every good Democrat should be, and yet they're playing politics with it. And you wait, they're going to give in on it. But even if they do, Barack Obama ought to be out there leading the fight. Because he is the party leader right now, and he better act like it. So, you hear Barack, you got to do that. And also about the war. I haven't heard the specifics that I want to hear about the Iraq war. Of course, I haven't heard any specifics from any candidate. They don't want to do it, do they? They don't quite have the courage to go ahead and just lay it all on the line and say, I will withdraw our troops from Iraq by July of next year. That's the kind of thing I want to hear. I want them out. We deserve that. And you know who really deserves it? The troops do. I've heard from a few troops lately. Just three over the weekend. That are feeling very much abandoned. Not abandoned by the American people. They feel abandoned by the leadership in this country. And a certain respect by the people, because now, as everyone knows, the Iraq war is not the central issue in the general election coming up. It's secondary. And all their lives evidently are secondary to all the Americans, to the economy. Seems we think of our billfolds first and the lives of our troops second. First and foremost, let's get us out of Iraq. Let's come up with a plan to get us out of Iraq. And then maybe you'll have the support that you need from the American people to turn this economy around as well. We need a guy that can take the flag and run with it and say, come on, follow me. And Barack Obama is that man. He is a man that can do that. There's no question in my mind that he's the man that can do that. But he's got to get out there, and he's got to be willing to do that, and he's got to take the bull by the horns, take the initiative, and let's come up with your plan here, Barack. Let's hear it. Let's hear it. Expound upon it. If you think you've adequately described it to the American public, let's hear it again. Let's hear it in detail as much as possible. And let's have your promise. Let's raise your hand and let's give a solemn vow to the American people that I, Barack Obama, will end this war by such and such a time next year. I'll have the people out of here, and the Iraqis are going to have to take care of themselves. And that we will never, under my term, go into a war like that again. We need to know that from our leaders. We need to trust our leaders that much. And if he comes out and promises that he'll do this at a certain time and get it over with and set a timetable, regardless of what the Republicans say, set a timetable for our withdrawal out of Iraq, then he will be looked upon as a great leader. A great leader. Set the timetable and do it. And he will be a great leader. And there's nothing the American people won't do for him if we do that. So, that's my request of the Obama campaign right now. Please, articulate your positions to the American people. I've talked to many, many, many people about Barack Obama that do not know when for sure he's planning on getting us out. Oh, yes, he's alluded to it. But we want more. We need to know more. And also, I want him to speak out on this FISA Act because it's critical right now. they're going to go ahead with this FISA thing and to hell with us, and it just doesn't matter. Steny Hoyer's in it up to his ears. He's going to give in. I know he's going to, and I think he needs a nudge from Barack Obama. Him and Nancy both. We'll see if it makes any difference. I certainly hope so. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour, and we'll be back. Don't you go away.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. U.S. airlines are projecting a combined loss of $10 billion this year as they struggle with the huge spike in fuel costs. In U.S. Senate testimony, the Air Transport Association's James May said the flying public will pay the price as air service could be lost in 200 communities around the country as airlines cut back to save money. The airlines are spending 50% more for fuel than they did last year. Rising fuel costs continue to have an impact around the world, and in South Korea, workers are on the march protesting the high cost of fuel. Jesse Russell reports.
17,000 South Korean construction workers went on strike Monday over the skyrocketing cost of fuel. The unionized workers are demanding a higher rate for hauling freight. South Korea is already being hit by a strike by 13,000 unionized truck drivers who are seeking higher subsidies from the government for fuel. The Korean Confederation of Trade Unions announced plans to strike in the coming weeks to protest the policies of the South Korean president. They are demanding a faster reaction to the rising fuel costs, but will also be protesting plans to privatize South Korean businesses.
Some workers at a GM plant in Lordstown, Ohio, received good news this week. The company, which recently announced plans to close four plants, will be adding a new shift on August 4th, a month earlier than previously projected. The new shift will provide 1,400 additional jobs at the plant, and recently laid off workers will have first priority. The assembly plant currently employs 2,645 hourly workers. The Urban Agenda's Joanne Derwin says her group is working closely in New York City with unions to create green jobs, including in affordable housing construction and green retrofitting of buildings.
With the need to respond to climate change, what we need to do is seize that opportunity in order to create good green-collar jobs. What we have been doing is working with unionized contractors to get them certified so that they're qualified to bid on that work.
The Urban Agenda is honoring Ray Pacino, a vice president of the Laborers International Union of North America. Derwin says that he's influential in helping the laborers develop new markets like the 1-to-6 family affordable housing unit market.
You're proud that he is at the helm of one of the largest, most visionary, most progressive unions in America.
Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
The housing sector continued to struggle in May. Housing starts shrank by 3.3% over April, about 5,000 less than projected by economists. Applications for building permits also continued to decline, dropping 1.3% over April. Declining building permit requests is usually a bad sign for coming months, as it means less houses will be built.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What will you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You can do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/pass it on. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it. The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's gonna freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? In my creation! Life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
You count down. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
Your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody. Good to have you along with us this afternoon. Just received word from Mike P. Cesar, Communications Director of the Office of Representative Jim McDermott, that once again, they're going to have to reschedule today. They have floor votes coming up over the next 75 to 90 minutes, so I guess there isn't a whole lot we can do about that. So we'll have Congressman McDermott on again another time. Hey, I got a treat for you tomorrow. I do. You know who's going to be on the program tomorrow? Should make you guess. You know, do that thing closer, warmer. No. Mike Gravel's going to be on the program tomorrow. Yes, he is. Mike Gravel's going to be on the show tomorrow, and it's going to be interesting. I promise you that that will be interesting. So we got him coming up, I think, the bottom of the first hour tomorrow. Mike Gravel, candidate for president, an interesting guy. Very interesting guy. And so he's going to be with us tomorrow. You won't want to miss that, I promise you. I got some email there during the break. I was able to look at a little bit of it. Our friend John Stojic says he sent me a link for the Casa Bonita in Denver. Oh, yeah. I'll look at that. And Stuart sent a good note, as always. And Stuart, you just make too much sense sometimes. You just, you ought to be in Washington. You ought to have 535 guys like you in Congress. We conquered the, and let me quote to what he said here. We conquered the second largest reserve of oil in the world, and prices have gone up 3 to 4 times. So that reserve is going to private companies, but did that help prices? So why would we turn more public reserves over to private if the objective was to lower prices? Some theorize that the conquering of Iraq was to stop Saddam from selling oil and keep prices low. He needed the money due to sanctions. The heat should be put on Bush and McCain about the supply coming out of Iraq. Put them on the defensive. Why aren't they pushing stronger fuel efficiency standards if they care so much? Honda is starting mass production of hydrogen cars now. Where is Detroit? Seems to me it just helps more monopolization of the market, and I am not aware that monopolies or oligopolies result in lower prices. Are you? Well, certainly not. And you certainly have a point there. So we know it's not about drilling. It's not about getting more supply. It's about gouging. It's about profit. It's about obscene profit. Okay? 866-546-5254 if you'd like to be on the program today. 866-546-5254. We haven't talked about the floods today, and I do want to talk about it because I'm not sure that the American public, it's not as though I know everything that's going on, but if the American public knew what they ought to know about these floods, and they're going to find out soon enough. It's going to be a tough thing. And aside from the pictures on TV, I do wonder how many Americans are aware of what is about to happen to us along about October. I'm a guy that was born and raised in farm country. Good farm country. Flat black dirt that raised a lot of good crops, and I'm aware of the fact that we've got a catastrophe on our hands, and very few people see it coming. And the immediate future is indicating that we're about to see a huge spike in food prices. You think they've gone up now? You wait. Many thousands of acres of corn are being wiped out in the floods. And when harvest time comes this year, along about October, you're going to see the price of corn go through the roof. And I guess one of my points here is, do you realize how many products you eat that have corn in them? Many things you eat around the house, snack foods, regular foods, your corn chips, you're not going to be affordable. They're not going to be affordable. You're not going to buy those anymore unless you've got plenty of dough. And along with a lot of other grocery items, the processed food industry has been successful, and they owe their success to the cheap corn that we've had all these years. And it's been dirt cheap. And the packaging costs are going to go sky high because of the increased cost of oil and the increased delivery cost of them to the grocery store. There's so many facets to this problem, so many facets. And even after this flood, food's going to continue to be high because most of the fertilizer used to get huge yields of corn is petroleum-based. A lot of people think the farmers have gotten rich. The prices of corn and soybeans and wheat are at record highs right now. And everybody's saying, well, the farmers are getting rich. They are not. The cost of production is outrageous right now. The cost of fertilizer went sky high. Seed corn sky high. I mean, we are getting average yields of over 200 bushel an acre now. It's fairly common. That's compared to about 80 bushels about 40 years ago. And we're getting 60, 70, 80 bushels to an acre of wheat as compared to 30 or 40 bushels 40 years ago. And the same thing with soybeans, getting a much greater yield than we always did. But the days of cheap oil are over, and along with it, cheap crop prices are gone too. And I mean gone, and they're gone forever. These aren't any ordinary floods we're dealing with right now. These are floods that have eaten into serious farm country. I mean, Iowa City, for God's sake. And so these are what they call 500-year floods. Or they're not your granddaddy's flood or your granddaddy's floods. 500-year floods. Which is an event that hasn't even been seen since non-Indian people started living out there in that area. That vast area of the American prairie that's turned into such fertile ground in Iowa and in that area, in Illinois. The vast majority of homeowners in eastern Iowa didn't even have flood insurance. Because the actual likelihood of being affected above that 500-year flood line was so absolutely minuscule that the insurance agents actually advised most everybody against getting flood insurance. So there's going to be a trail of personal ruin out here that's going to be horrible. It's going to be absolutely horrible. And as a friend and I were talking about the other day, it's going to be the 2008 version, along with the global warming and everything else we've got here going on right now. It's going to be the 2008 version of the 1930s Oki migration, the Dust Bowl, with a lot of farm families facing total losses, losing everything they've got, and having to move someplace else in the nation. And we'll end up with big corporate farms taking over the land and farming it somehow. That's what we'll end up with. And guess who profits by that? Well, you know. So it's an ugly time we've got to look forward to in the fall. And this is going to be another, and I don't know how to compare it exactly, but I think it's going to be another slow motion disaster, kind of like Katrina in 2005. And we're going to have a bunch of people who are going to be displaced, a bunch of people that have lost everything they have in the world. We are at a place in the world right now, and a lot of people think, well, there's this endless supply of grain. There is not. The world grain reserves are at record lows right now, record lows for grain reserves. And so these losses that are coming up in Iowa and Illinois are huge, huge. When you add them on to what was already a pretty bad-looking scenario coming up. And so far, here in this country anyway, the only thing that's hit us with this grain situation is higher prices in the supermarket. But do remember that cheap corn, like I said, is in so many products, especially the processed food industry, all those pizza pockets and along with the petroleum, the juicy juice boxes that Americans resort to because they don't have any time to cook because they got everybody in the family working. They come home and they got 5 minutes together to eat and somebody throws something in the microwave. And so these processed foods are selling at an all-time in huge numbers. But also adding to that, this wasn't magic here about why we've been the breadbasket of the world for so long. We were. When you take a good look at agribusiness, we've done it on cheap oil. And because of the cheap oil, we've done it with cheap natural gas-based fertilizer. And now those are not cheap anymore, and the farmers are paying record prices. Diesel fuel to run the machines to do the planting and the tilling and the harvesting is $1 a gallon higher than gasoline, the diesel fuel is. Think about that when you put that in some of these tractors that guys use. I've done it. Natural gas prices have doubled over this past year, and that's made the price of fertilizers out of sight. And farmers aren't known for big business models. Your family farmers, they're not positioned to totally reform the way that they farm. And so it's going to be a lot more complicated. The guys aren't going to be able to even put out crops in some cases at the price of it this year. And there's so many other things in American life that's going to be changed by this. We've known for many years, anybody with a brain knows, anybody that can use logic knows, that sooner or later, the world population is going to overtake the ability of us to grow food. That only makes sense. Someday there are going to be too many people on the planet, and we aren't going to be able to grow enough food for everybody. You know, and along with that comes famine and war and pestilence and all that good stuff. But we're heading for crunch time this fall. And so your taco chips and your cheese doodles and everything you else have you have with corn in is going to be out of sight. And you're going to see shortages. People are going to be hard up for food and gasoline. The oil scene's probably the next thing where we're going to see shortages. They'll make artificial shortages if they have to raise the price even higher. Chances are, and this is the great news for where I live, that they think the shortages will show up in southeastern states first because oil exports from Mexico and Venezuela feeding the Gulf of Mexico refineries are down more than 30% during 2007. And one of the really ugly consequences of the whole thing, again, is on the trucking scene. We've got truckers going broke in record numbers. And you have to have tremendous empathy for these truckers trying to carry on their business. They get paid a couple of grand for a load that cost them $3,000 to deliver. They're not going to stay in business very long. And already we've seen in Europe that truckers have gone on strike in France and in Spain and Portugal. So I don't want to be the purveyor of doom and gloom, but I guess I have been today. But this every supermarket, I'm told, has about a three-day supply of food in the supermarket. And there are going to be shortages. There's going to be the problem with oil. We've got the hurricane season coming up. It's a train wreck waiting to happen. It certainly is. And just want you to be aware, the worse this flood gets, the worse the scenario looks around October this year with floods and all. See, the Wall Street market closed down 130 points today. It got actually went down under the 12,000 mark for a little bit. Oil went up to 136.68, closed at 136.68, so not going to have any mercy on us there along with the oil prices, that's for sure. 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Love to have you join us this afternoon. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes or two.
Trail of broken hearts, looking back at you. Now and from the start, these words will travel through. The Godspeed of trust will set. We'll be right back.
crested crab, the halves, and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
It's true.
Call Guy James now. 1-866-546-5254.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Everybody listening on the Head On Radio Network chat room, iTunes, all around the internet, welcome to the show. Glad to have all of you along. I do want to remind you that the incomparable, yes, I said incomparable, Mark Levine is coming up next. And after that, the ever great and gracious Bob Kincaid will be with you tonight. So great programming coming up here on the Head On Radio Network. Every single day. So, welcome, and we're glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. Tremendous news today. Tremendous news. Let's get to politics a little bit today. The polls. One of the most highly touted one of the polls you can trust the very most that I've found out over the past few years is the Quinnipiac University poll. They do a great job in polling. And I'm just happy as can be with the latest one that just came out today, and many of you have heard some of this, I'm sure. But Obama leads McCain in Florida, in Ohio, and in Pennsylvania. Yes, yes, yes. Obama is ahead of McCain in Florida, 47-43. Let me tell you, Obama has not even campaigned here that much. In Ohio, Obama is ahead of McCain, 48-42%. And in Pennsylvania, Obama leads McCain, 52-40%. That is great news. No Republican has taken the White House in the last, I don't know how many years, a good many, without winning two of those three states. And it's not going to happen this year. This firms up what I have believed all along, that Obama has gotten a nice bounce out of here, out of the primary. People are beginning to realize, they're beginning to make they're just beginning to see him a lot. He's campaigning like crazy. But he's got a 4% edge in Florida, which at this point in the game, that's fabulous news. And a 6-point lead in Ohio and in Pennsylvania. And don't forget, Ohio and Florida both went for Bush in last election. Ain't going to happen this time, baby. Pennsylvania, he's up 12 points. And, of course, Kerry took Pennsylvania last time around. So in the three states, Obama leads McCain 10-23 points among women, getting a huge lead amongst women. And the men in all three of the states are close. Obama's getting 90% of the black vote in each of those states, and he's also got double-digit leads among young voters in each state, and that's great news. I love the fact that the young voters are coming along nicely. So this poll, and also Virginia and North Carolina are coming up kind of close. And as far as the vice president going on, and it's probably against my better judgment to even talk that much about it. Have you noticed how the media? Well, when is Obama? When's Obama gonna get his vice president? My God, he's got to pick somebody. He's got to pick somebody. He better hurry. They're all over that story, aren't they? Every day. All over that story. When's he going to get the vice president? When's he going to do it? He's got to do it. Well, guess what, folks? McCain doesn't have a vice presidential candidate either, and he doesn't need to right now. He just doesn't need to. So, cool your jets, media. Take it easy. It'll happen. When it's necessary, when it's convenient, when it's the proper time, when Mr. Obama, Senator Obama, figures out it's time to name his vice president, he will do that. Until then, the media's going to go nuts. Let them. It fascinates me the way they take off and run with a story and beat it to death. And that's what they're doing on that one. And finally, not finally, stick with me on some of this. It's fairly interesting, the numbers. While Democrats support the idea, independent voters in each state say Obama should not choose Senator Clinton as his vice presidential running mate. Now, amongst Democrats in Florida, 57-33% do want Hillary on the ticket. Of course, Republicans are opposed, and that really doesn't matter in the vote. And independents are 46-37 against. So really, when you average the two out, that's a +5 net for Hillary being the VP candidate right there amongst Democrats and independents. And now in Ohio, the percentage that wants Clinton for vice president is 58-31 against. And again, Republicans are against her. But the independents voted her down 47-31. So again, that's 11 point net. That's a +11 for Hillary Clinton being vice president, the way I see it. And in Pennsylvania, it's pretty much the same thing. Democrats say yes to Hillary Clinton 60-31. Republicans say no. And independents nix the idea 49-36%. That's a 16% net gain for Hillary Clinton on the ticket. So I don't know. I think that looks good for her, but there's a lot of other indicators right now saying that that just won't happen. Bush's approval ratings in those states, 27 in Florida, 22 in Ohio, and 24 in Pennsylvania. Man, I'll tell you, for two Republican states out of three, that's some bad news, isn't it, for somebody running for the office following up a boob like Junior Bush? 50-58% of the voters in each state list the economy as the most important issue in deciding on how they vote. And once again, like I mentioned, everybody thinks that their bill vote first. I think the war ought to be up there. By almost 2-1 margin in each state, voters are going to war with Iraq was wrong. But they split between Obama's plan to withdraw U.S. troops under a fixed timetable and McCain's plan to keep troops there until the situation stabilizes and then withdraw without a set schedule. That's one of the things I'm trying to get across about Obama. He needs to be more specific. He needs to hammer that point home. There's something right there that in those three states, it's 2-1 against the war, but it's even between Obama's plan and McCain's plan, and that shouldn't be. That should not be, and I'm sure Obama's people are making note of that, that we've got the edge with people thinking the war is wrong. We also ought to have the edge between our plan and his plan, so I'm sure they'll maybe do something about that. He needs to talk about it more. I want to see some articulation on that. And the only good news for McCain in these numbers is that despite voters' views on the war, he is holding his own with them about where to go from here on the war. So, and in Florida, got a big lead with women voters. Glad to see that. What else we got here? Apparently picking a Floridian for vice president won't help either party carry the state's 27 electoral votes. They've brought up Bill Nelson and Charlie Crist. I'll tell you something. Charlie Crist has got a really good favorable rating here in Florida, and I'll be damned if I can figure out why. Republicans are Republicans, and they'll do what they're going to do. But here's a man that ran for governor. And we've got a terrible crisis in the state with insurance rates. Terrible crisis, driving people out of Florida. And he promised he was going to help with insurance rates. And you know what he's done? Nothing. Nothing. In fact, the insurance companies have put a surcharge on everybody here in Florida. And Charlie very recently went along with extending the surcharge for another, two or three years. I don't know how long. He has done nothing. So I'm and I'm not saying that because he's a Republican. I wanted Charlie Crist to come in here and be a good governor, but I swear I am just not able to see where people think that he's got such a great favorable rating or why. I'm not getting it. Just not getting it at all. In Ohio, Obama's leading amongst women, 51 to 39%, 12%. And amongst men, 46% for McCain and 45% for Obama. So that's pretty close. But again, the black vote, 90-6. 90-6. And an important statistic in all that out of Ohio, 13% of those who voted for Bush in 2004 are now backing Obama. 13%. That voted for Bush are now voting for Obama. That is very, very good news. And in Florida, 13% of those who voted for Bush are now supporting Obama. So the tide is beginning to turn here. In Pennsylvania, 19% of the people who voted for Bush in 2004 are now backing Obama. So the bounce happened. He's off to a nice little lead here, not definitive, of course, but a nice lead, not comfortable, but there's a trend. And as you know, those numbers were very different before the end of the primary. Since the primary is virtually over with, it is over with, why the numbers have gone up significantly for Barack Obama, and it is my contention that they'll go up far more than they are right now. I firmly believe that unless there's some sort of a freak thing that happens here someplace, that Barack Obama should wipe the floor with John McCain. That's not think about it. John McCain is just not any kind of a candidate at all. He's developed his own little smirk. He stands up there and says things on the stage. High taxes. High taxes, the Democrats are going to raise. Oh, when are they going to stop with that? I am so tired of that. Aren't you? Tax and spend, Democrats. Let's see, Mr. McCain, who was it that sent the deficit higher than ever? Who was it that increased the national debt more than it's ever been increased before? And you want to talk about higher taxes? And we've already shown that Senator Obama's tax plan for the working man is far, far, far superior to yours. You want to give tax breaks to the rich, nothing to people, the working man, and Obama wants it just the opposite. So when McCain stands up there on the edge, and economists are showing that all over, that his plan, Obama's tax plan, is so much better for the working man and the poor than McCain's. And yet he stands up and, well, you got those tax and spend Democrats, you know. Well, it ain't so. It ain't so. There was a time, but it's not so anymore. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to give us a call. I see that Junior Bush, I got this off of Sky News. They've got some sort of a talent for getting George Bush to say stupid things that other people find funny or painful or both. And here's the latest one. Junior Bush was asked by a Sky News correspondent whether the end of his term marked the end of the Bush presidential dynasty that began with his father's Oval Office tenure 20 years ago. And in response, Junior Bush singled out his brother, who has often been mentioned as a possible Republican presidential contender. Well, said Junior Bush, we've got another one and out there who did a fabulous job as the governor of Florida, and that's Jeb, he said. But you know, you better ask him whether or not he's thinking of running, but he'd be a great president indeed. And here's how we can be sure. Because it's certified by the same president who still thinks we're winning in Iraq. The same president that thinks we don't torture people. And the same president thinks he's going to go down in history as one of the greatest presidents. and that cutting taxes raises revenue, and that Brownie was doing a good job, and that Harriet Myers was the most qualified person in the U.S. to be a Supreme Court justice. And that the Seas of David paintball warriors plan to bomb the Sears Tower was a serious terrorist plot. Yes. And because America has so clearly indicated that what it's looking for now more than anything else is to continue the glorious successes of George Bush's administration, it's not McLame McSane, but the real deal, a real live in the flesh Bush. Good story from Sky News. Thank you, folks.
Did you see
Junior make the comment the other day? Well, I've had the misfortune of having a—I don't know if he said misfortune. I have had a lot of catastrophes happen in my administration. I thought to myself when I saw that, buddy, and you're the biggest catastrophe that's ever happened to this country. Number uno. Remember that number 43, the 43rd president of the United States, ended up being the one. The one, the chosen one. Where were we here? I think we're going to pause for a break coming up here. I did want to mention that, you know, you talk about politics and how dirty they are. Yesterday, the folks over at Think Progress had this on. Yesterday, Senator John McCain proposed lifting the federal ban on offshore oil drilling in Florida. Now, Charlie Crist, the governor that I just finished talking about right now, last week he was questioned, and the question was, Governor, are you dropping your opposition to drilling for oil off Florida's coast? Crist said, I am not. This is last week. I am not. Number one, I don't like it. Well, they asked Charlie Crist the same thing today. And he said, I think that not having that blanket moratorium and letting states' rights be recognized, if you will, is certainly appropriate. Mm-hmm. And also, our esteemed senator here in Florida, our Republican senator, Mel Martinez, who was once joined at the hip with Senator Bill Nelson in opposing offshore oil drilling, is also linked up with McCain today. And Mel Martinez says, I think it's about providing enough resources where the states want to do it. The governor seems to agree with him, and I kind of agree with him, so maybe things are changing in that regard, says Mel Martinez. Probably the most unknown and simple-minded senator to be in that office in a long, long time. Yeah, I do mean that. You ever been around him? So Florida politicians of both parties have worked to keep the drilling ban in force along Florida's shores for more than 25 years because they feared it would harm the state's beaches and it is so far, you know, vital to its tourism. And Jeb Bush himself pushed hard for the ban on drilling. But MSNBC noted today that no Republicans in Florida have gotten elected statewide without endorsing the moratorium on offshore oil drilling. If Chris tries to rationalize the McCain decision, then we'll find out just how much he wants to be on the ticket. There are a lot of people here in Florida think Charlie Crist is working hard to be on the ticket, which I was going to say Junior Bush, Junior McCain, whatever, McBush. Why would they pick Charlie Crist? Been a governor for a couple of years, really no experience before that. I'm not really understanding. I don't know. What do I know? 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We'll be back in a moment.
John McCain has done more than just embrace George Bush's failed policy in Iraq. It's actually his idea to escalate the war there. It's John McCain's idea to send tens of thousands more soldiers to Iraq and to keep them there with no timeline for bringing them home. The McCain plan to escalate, going from bad to worse.
This is not America.
welcome back, everybody. We're down to the last 10 minutes of the show today. Don't forget, we're going to have special guest tomorrow. Mike Gravel is going to be on the program tomorrow, talking about his new book. In fact, I don't have the title of it right here. Anyway, he's going to be with us. I have gotten a lot of books to review lately that I'm going to have authors on coming up here soon. I didn't want to let this day end without talking to you about one of my favorite subjects, and probably one of the most despicable parts of this whole mess that we're in right now in Iraq and Afghanistan is, and as you well know, you know how I feel about the terrible disregard for our soldiers and our troops that the Bush administration has shown. Everybody's, oh, we support the troops. Yeah, right. What happens when you become disabled in the military? Do you know right now? I've got this story about a gentleman in San Antonio. His name is Isaac Stevens, and his lifelong dream of becoming a soldier had in the end come to this for Isaac Stevens. Penniless, in a wheelchair, fending off the sexual advances of another man in a homeless shelter, Stevens' descent from the Army Private First Class 3rd Infantry Division 11th Bravo Company began in 2005, not in battle, since he was never sent off to Iraq or Afghanistan, but with a head-first fall over a wall on the obstacle course at Fort Benning, Georgia. He suffered a head injury and spinal damage. And the injury alone didn't put him in a homeless shelter. Instead, it was military bureaucracy. Specifically, the way injured soldiers are discharged on just a fraction of their salary, then forced to wait 6 to 9 months, and sometimes even more, before their full disability payments begin to flow. When I got out, he said, I hate to say it, but man, that was it. Everybody just kind of washed their hands of me, and it was like, okay, you're on your own, said Stevens, who was discharged in November and who was in a shelter by February. He has since moved into a temporary San Antonio apartment with the help of Operation Homefront, a nonprofit organization. Nearly 20,000 disabled soldiers were discharged in the past two fiscal years, and lawmakers, veterans advocates, and others say thousands could be facing financial ruin while they wait for their claims to be processed and their benefits to come through. The anecdotal evidence is depressing, said Representative John Hall, Democrat from New York, who heads a subcommittee on veterans' disability benefits. These veterans are getting medical care, but their family is going through this huge readjustment at the same time, and they're dealing with financial difficulties. Most permanently disabled veterans qualify for payments from Social Security and the military or Veterans Affairs, but those sums can amount to about two-thirds of their active duty pay. But until those checks show up, most disabled veterans draw a reduced Army paycheck. The amount depends on the soldier's injuries, service time, and other factors, but a typical veteran and his family, who once lived on $3,400 a month, might have to make do with $970 a month, unless a soldier has a personal fortune who was so severely injured as to require long-term inpatient care. That can be an extreme hardship. The Army, stung by the scandal last year over the shoddy care at Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington, has been working to help soldiers during their in-between period. Should there be an in-between period is my question. In-between period? Why can't they expedite this so these people aren't having financial difficulties? In a change in policy that took effect last August, the Army is allowing wounded soldiers to continue to draw their full Army paychecks for up to 90 days. Oh, big deal. Wounded. 90 days. It's also sending more VA workers to Army posts to process claims more quickly and trying to do a better job of informing soldiers of the available benefits and explaining the application process. We make certain that we've covered all the bases before we discharge the soldier. Well, it doesn't sound like it to me. If there's a huge gap in when they stop drawing their paycheck or getting only a third of it and when they're getting actual disability pay, that's just not acceptable. That is just not acceptable. We ask them to go off and do their duty. They do it, and we treat them this way. And it's not right. It's absolutely not right. We've heard about the horrendous conditions in some of the barracks the men come home to. We've heard about the Walter Reed scandal. We've heard about the trying to muster as many out with pre-existing conditions that they possibly can. We've had that story. The care and treatment of our American military personnel has been absolutely abysmal since this whole mess started. It started off wrong to begin with, sending them over there with improperly armored vehicles, sending them over there with none or improper, inferior body armor, because we needed to get it started fast, you know. Preemptive war that just couldn't wait any longer until the troops were equipped the way they ought to be. Families and the troops having to buy their own body armor. Our military personnel digging through the scrap heaps around Baghdad and other places of wrecked military vehicles so that they could find more metal to armor up their own vehicles. It's a disgrace the way this whole thing was handled. From start, and I was going to say to finish, but it's a long way from finished, and I think we all know that. If any of you have any idea at all when this thing is finished, you're way ahead of me. Because I wish I could sit here and say with any confidence at all, well, I think next year after the election, maybe 6 months, maybe a year, we'll be able to. No, I have no confidence in that at all. That's why I just said earlier that we need our candidate, we need Barack Obama, to talk about this some more. We need him primarily to reassure their troops that this isn't going to be a bottomless pit. This isn't going to be some place where we ship troops off to and forget them like we've done in other places in the world. I think it's a disgrace, and I really hope Obama will start talking about it. He needs to. More for the troops than anything else. They're over there. They feel abandoned. They feel let down by our leaders. They feel lied to by our leaders. Most of them know now that this occupation of Iraq has been a pariah. Most of them know that the American public is not behind this Bush occupation. Most of them know the lies and distortions that Bush has used to get us in it in the first place. And they feel betrayed by their commander-in-chief. I've heard it over and over and over again. So it would be a good time for Barack Obama to step it up and reassure our military personnel that he will do everything in his power to end this conflict in some sort of a way that can get the troops home as soon as possible and give them some hope. Give them some hope that they'll be back home with their friends and their family soon. To leave them there not knowing when this is going to happen is just absolutely wrong. It's as wrong can be. And I do believe Barack Obama could do a lot in allaying their fears and their concern over this. So, for the good of the troops, I hope he does so. Say, I do want to remind everybody that the Guy James Show is a listener-supported program. We're at a point in this whole thing where we could most certainly use your help with the show. We certainly could. And you can do that by going to our website, theguyjamesshow.com. And there's a place on there for PayPal and our snail mail address. I do thank everybody that's chipped in. Appreciate it so very, very much. I try hard to correspond with everybody that, not that I actually get it done, but I do try. So, thanks for that. Do remember that. Mark Levine coming up next. Bob Kincaid after that. You're listening to The Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. And proud to be so, by the way. And we'll be back tomorrow with another show. Thanks to Billy Shears, music director.